San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, I am Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from the KFMB studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night and out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He is a marathon runner extraordinaire. He is a CPA. He is a family office advisor to several high net worth families. And he's a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. And I'm out of breath. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was out of breath this morning because I ran the Rock and Roll Half Marathon.
How was that this year?
What a zoo, man. That's a lot of people. It was fun.
That's great. That is great. I got to mention one thing. I visited last week. I was invited to the University of San Diego. They started up a legal clinic for veterans.
Right.
And it was very well attended. The mayor was there, made a nice speech. A lot of dignitaries, a lot of military. And I talked to the supervising attorney, I guess his name is Bob Muth, and he's a former Marine. And he was a great speaker. And I promised him we'd get him on the air here at some point. So in the next few weeks, let's shoot for that. But anyway, we've got a great show tonight, don't we, Richard?
We got a really special guest tonight. So enough about us.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, this gentleman here, he's run plenty of big events himself, and I mean run in the administrative sense. You know, the San Diego Air and Space Museum is an icon in this city. If you haven't been there, you got to get down there. San Diego Air and Space .org, I believe. But anyway, we are honored to have tonight as our guest the president and CEO of the San Diego Air and Space Museum, and his name is James Kidrick, but he likes to be called Jim. So, Jim, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm well, and thanks for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Our pleasure. So, well, look, we've got a whole hour to fill here, so why don't you start where where was your first cradle and all that, and get us up to education, and then we'll get into the museum and stuff.
Well, you mentioned your signal can stretch up to Seattle, and I originally was born in Bremerton, Washington. I lived for a short time in South Tacoma, Edmonds, and then from age 10 moved to Centralia, Washington, which is located midway between Seattle and Portland. And ultimately a graduate of the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma, and then on my way to become a naval aviator in Pensacola, Florida, back in 1971. In and out of San Diego, Lemoore, Kingsville, Texas, Corpus Christi, moved quite, the Bay Area, then ultimately leaving the service in 1992. And I was already back in San Diego at that time, been here ever since. Produced San Diego Bay Fair World Series of Powerboat Racing for about 8.5 years. I'm still on their board, as a matter of fact, and which is, I think, one of the true legacy events here in our San Diego region. The unlimited hydroplanes and then ultimately ventured out to do a couple other things, including additional events, the Jet Ski World Championships in Lake Havasu. And I've done 13 or 14 air shows, a little defense contractor work with Titan Corporation running the electronic combat range up in China Lake. And then ultimately transitioning kind of back to San Diego. So I lived in San Diego, kind of worked out of town, and joined the museum about 7.5 years ago. Hmm. And we're having fun.
Now, you were a naval aviator, correct?
Yes.
So they don't train in Colorado Springs. That's Air Force. Where do you guys train?
Well, I started in Pensacola, Florida, transitioned up to Meridian, Mississippi, and then down to Kingsville is where I got my wings back September 21st, 1973.
Because you guys have to land your jets on ships. It's a little more difficult.
How many hours did you do on and off of aircraft carrier?
Well, I've got a little just under 4,300 hours total.
Wow.
And
wow.
And, of course, the first time landing on an aircraft carrier in an A-4 Skyhawk, on the USS Lexington in the Gulf of Mexico.
That's where the wire catches you as you land?
Well, you hope it does.
And, that's the plan, Joe.
You're starting to sound like Tim Conway.
well, it's one of those because, as you get close to that, I still remember overhead that ship that you know, the very first time, and we're flying wing, you know, one of the instructors looking down at that carrier, which looks awfully small, by the way.
Yeah.
And realizing that the recruiter had not discussed all of the intricacies of what I was going to be experiencing, you know, saying I could still go back.
You're having flashbacks at this point.
That's right. And because, you know, there are certain things, you know, it's kind of like when you hit the deck, I think most people know that as soon as we have, because the airplane is still flying, we put the throttle into military thrust, so 100%, so that if the hook should skip or we should land slightly long, and it's what they call a bolter, that we just go right back up into the air, you know, rotate and come back around and try it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always, you know, said, well, how are you going to know to pull that power back? I mean, what, you know, you're going to, and, you know, somebody said, well, you'll know. and that probably was the one understatement at the time, that you, when you catch the wire, there's no doubt you've caught the wire. You know, you want to make sure you've locked your harness and so you're not thrown into the...
So when you're airborne right before the ship, how fast are you going? Are you going from that speed to zero? Like, you know,
well, usually you'll come into the brake. That can be a varying speed, but, you know, it's probably going to be in the, you know, 250 to 350, you know, knots. And you'll come off the 180 somewhere, you know, in that 140, 150, you know, knot range. And but I think it's the cat shot, certainly, because you're going to, in the old carriers, the cat stroke was about 250 feet. The newer, bigger ones, all of 310 feet. And so in that mere, you know, 2 to 3 seconds, you're going to accelerate to somewhere around 200 miles per hour. So it spills the coffee if, you've got the, if you've got the mug out.
Anyway, so how'd you get involved in the, well, first you were on the foundation for the Air and Space, right?
Well, I did. I actually, I think because of my background at the time, I was solicited by a board member who was someone I knew very, very well. And I shouldn't reveal all of this, but he sent me an email, mm-hmm. and it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I'm pretty close. It said Slug, which was my call sign as a naval aviator. I didn't get Maverick or Iceman. I got, you know, Slug for a short little ugly guy. So, so if you do yell across the room and say Slug, I will respond as quickly as can.
So you've got a face made for radio, is what you're telling
us. Exactly. Okay, that's go. Right. I'm with you guys.
Yeah, well, I was going to say,
hey, at least
three,
you got a head of hair,
crowd,
so
right?
For God's sake.
So I got this email, said Slug, you know, I don't know if this email address is still good for you. What are those things? Mm-hmm. Have something you might be interested in. Call me Munt. And Munt was a call sign for a gentleman named Pat Moneymaker, who was, you know, when you fly out of Naval Air Station Lemoore up in the San mm-hmm. Joaquin Valley, we reference ourselves as Lemorons. So so he was another Lemoron and a very dear friend on the board. And it just kind of started a process, which led to coming on as the executive director of the Museums Foundation, which I still do. Mm-hmm. And then about 14, 15 months after that, becoming president and CEO. Gotcha. Of a great staff, by the way. We have a wonderful culture, wonderful team down there, and I want to always state right away, I'm very fortunate to be a member of their team.
And you've been there since about 06, right?
Right. Actually, I went to the first board meeting in December of 05 and started January 1, 2006.
Hmm. Okay, 7 years.
Yeah.
There you go. So, Richard, you had a question.
Well, my question is this, because I know a lot of our listeners haven't been. The museum, does it talk about the entire history of aviation?
Yes.
I mean, from day one? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And is there a focus more on airplanes versus outer space?
No, aviation? I think we have extremely balanced focus. You know, we're going to talk about military, all mm-hmm. services, not okay. just Navy, Marine Corps, which certainly we're a Navy, Marine Corps town. You know, so we've got Army Air Corps, Air Force, you know, Coast Guard, and the Marine Corps, mm-hmm. Including certainly commercial aviation, business aviation, light sport aviation, general aviation, space. And I feel very fortunate, actually, that we can touch, you know, on those. Because, you know, when you look at kind of those watershed moments in the timeline of aviation and space and really technology and innovation. You know, Joe and I talk about this innovation thing, you know, an awful lot because when you look at December 17, 1903, you know, the first time an airplane, you know, travels down some rails.
Excuse me, Jim, I'm getting the wave that we have to take a break. So we'll come back at 1903. As soon as we have this break,
To hold my breath?
Yeah, okay. We'll be back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guest, President and CEO of the Air and Space and Museum of San Diego. His name is Jim Kidrick, and back with Richard. So where were we at 1903, right, Richard?
We were 1903. It's a long time.
Why don't we pick up where was San Diego in the field of aviation around that time, Jim?
Well, you know, everything was really in its infancy, mm-hmm. and because things started progressing. Now, I would tell you the next watershed moment was certainly the solo flight by Charles Lindbergh, mm-hmm. May 20, 1927. Before that, Glenn Curtis had sold the first airplane, the A-1 Triad, to the United States Navy right here at North Island. Mm-hmm. So North Island is the birthplace of naval aviation in general. It's
Have a video down there of the very first naval plane, and it is it's a crude propeller.
We put it on the water, for the Naval Aviation Centennial.
Yeah.
But taking you through the timeline just real quick, talking about that innovation.
Sure.
Is that, so 1927, 35, Amelia does it, to, mm-hmm. 5 years to the day after Lindbergh.
Right.
Solo female. Jaeger's breaking the sound barrier in 47. We've got, Neil and Buzz walking on the moon in 1969. Mm-hmm. And, a program now retired, actually beginning in 1981, which in a weird sort of way was the greatest airplane a la spacecraft ever built. And that was the space shuttle, for what we affectionately call 30 years of shuttle. So we always look at ourselves as providing two key metaphors. Metaphor number one is we're the practical application of STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and I always throw in innovation. Mm-hmm. This is, that's what it looks like when it gets all done, because everything you see in the Air and Space Museum, for its time, it was state of the art. That was the best we could produce worldwide. And then certainly metaphor number two is the accomplishment of great people, great organizations, great teams, the women Air Force service pilots, it goes on and on and on, mm-hmm. The accomplishments of many. So, our goal is certainly to inspire young men and women to excel in their lives, because we don't have any belief that everybody's going to be an engineer, mm-hmm. aerospace engineer or a pilot, but maybe they take an extra math or science course, realizing, as you guys were referencing, we live in a pretty high-tech region, and we live in one that has an aerospace legacy really like no other.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize Charles Lindbergh, the plane was built in San Diego, Spirit of St. Louis.
Right.
You guys have a replica of it. It's
only flying replica.
Is it?
T. Claude Ryan actually participated in its construction with two other original builders. Last flew in 2003.
Yeah, I saw that in the museum. Yeah. So it actually does fly. No windows. He used a periscope, right? It's a flying gas tank.
He used a periscope? I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's no windows on. You got to go see this thing. It's amazing.
Wow.
But he took off from Dutch Flats, which is where the main post office is on Midway. That's where he took the maiden voyage to get to St. Louis, and St. Louis to New York, New York to Paris in 1929, which to do this by yourself, and the flight was like 33 hours and change, from New York to Paris.
Right.
To do this as an individual back then.
And all by yourself.
Yeah.
No flight control system.
No GPS,
autopilot.
Folks.
There wasn't a lot of air traffic.
No air traffic.
Well, that's very true. But no air traffic controllers, exactly. As we would say.
Isn't it amazing what we've done in less than a century, though? I mean, it's just...
And if you haven't ever seen, the story of Charles Lindbergh, with Jimmy Stewart. Growing mm-hmm. up, mm-hmm. it's one of the great movies of all time.
Really?
And I would recommend it to anyone. I think it's very inspiring. It tells a wonderful, wonderful story of accomplishment. Certainly the team, that helped build the airplane that,
What's the title of that movie?
I think it's the Lindbergh story.
Okay.
And absolutely wonderful, wonderful movie. And I mean that very sincerely.
Yeah. I've always liked what he's done. But that's... It's amazing. So, Richard,
Jim, I was born in 1958, so I was in elementary school starting around 1962. And, of course, back in the 60s, the space exploration was such a huge part of what the United States was doing in terms of innovation. And I sort of missed those days because it just seemed like to me that back then, when that competition against the Russians, it was just a really big deal. And I think we were truly leaders at that point. And I don't want to get into political issues on the air, but I think we sort of lost our leadership position in the world in a lot of areas, certainly in education. Can you explain, what in your mind, what the real significance of that whole movement of the late 50s, early 60s, into the late 60s, up through the time that Neil Armstrong and so on in 1969 landed on the moon? I mean, what did that mean to this country?
Well, I think it meant everything. I think you're absolutely dead on. It was exciting. It was something we wanted to not only participate in, we wanted to help, we wanted to watch, we wanted to, you know, to feel part of it. I think the competition model is a good one. You know, mm-hmm. when you think of the X Prize,
right?
You know, with Spaceship One, funded by Paul Allen, and with the Burt Rutan design. You know, I always tell people that Paul Allen probably spent $25 million to win 10. You know, that kind of thing, because. Most people, once again, don't realize that Lindbergh was competing in that for the Ortig Prize, which was $25,000 for the first team that could fly across the Atlantic solo. So, you know, that spirit of competition at that time is, as you so eloquently said, was against the Russians. Mm-hmm. Whatever that competition model is, sometimes it can be very, very, very good, and I think lead to wonderful achievements in innovation. I think,
and of course, we're collaborating a lot, though, in the space station.
Well, we are, but some of that collaboration, I think, if you ask the average American. Said to them, even though it is the International Space Station, mm-hmm. said, whose space station is it really? I'm going to tell you, most Americans are going to say it's ours. Mm-hmm. You know, that we have been inviting to others, uh-huh. okay? But certainly those technologies and the lead, Bill Shepard, actually, who was the first commander of the International Space Station, one of our board members, he did so with some Russian counterparts, mm-hmm. But I think most people have a great deal of, you know, hey, this is something that is America, it is mm-hmm. ours, and I think it also matches very much the American exploration spirit. Mm-hmm. I tell people one of our challenges nationally, as a people, is we reached the West Coast. You know, remember the old go west, young man? Mm-hmm. Well, once we got there, now we're starting to go up. We go mm-hmm. down into the oceans, yeah, you know, James. Other worlds. Yeah. And I think it's really the nature of us to want to explore and seek out and pursue innovation and technology.
Well, Stephen Hawking said we better find ourselves a new planet at some point because, this one may not have the longevity we all think it might. But anyway, it's a nice thought. But, hey, there's trillions of planets out there. I just saw some articles the other week.
There's so many we could almost have our own. We can't have one.
I hope we're not the only life out, you know, advanced life form.
It makes a lot of those political decisions easier.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Joe, you're assuming we're an advanced life form, by
well,
the
that's
way.
Right.
We may not be.
You're right.
I always say that's why I chose to fly single seat. I was
there
offered.
You go.
I was at a few Memorial Day events and looking around at the people. I'm going, God, are we the highest form of life on this planet? It's hard to imagine, but. But anyway, we're having fun. We're having fun here. So, but we got about 1 minute till the break. So,
I was sitting in Lakeside, California, on my family's living room couch when the moon landing happened. I mean, I remember it vividly. Used to watch all of the takeoffs and all of the landings out of the old Cape Canaveral.
Yep.
I mean, didn't miss them.
July of 69.
And what you're saying is something we hear from a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I know where I was mm-hmm. the first time that Neil and Buzz stepped onto the
moon. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the others. Because right.
I'm
kept
not saying
up.
Just that one.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
Others, but that was the one.
Hair was the big hit there back then, summer of 69.
Mm-hmm. Summer of 69.
We were playing the Aquarius theme. I remember that. I was working as a busboy in a restaurant, and it was a big deal. I mean, everyone remembers, like, you know, when John Lennon was shot, when Reagan was shot. People remember these things. When John Kennedy was shot, there's an important thing. But anyway.
Our very own Bill Anders. You know, they were the first ones to the moon and back, mm-hmm. you know, circled it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, the famed picture of Earthrise.
Right. All right. We'll have more air and space info after we come back from this break. New sports weather. Hang on. We'll be right back. All right. We're back in the second half of Victory Money in Life. And now over to Richard to thank all of our terrific sponsors.
All of our sponsors. Thank you. That would be, I'll name them. Okay. UBS, our major sponsor, UBS, with Mr. Michael Coronta and Mr. Drew Freitas. Thank you very much. Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton at Regents Bank. Signature Analytics, Mr. Jason Kruger, the best CFO here in San Diego. Joel Gruskin and Cost Segregation Analytics, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Our favorite CPAs, Don Epic CPA and Paul Polito CPA with Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista. Rich Gaines, estate planning expert with Family Legacy Legal. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Carl Scheeler with Business Valuations Limited, the best valuation resource west of the Mississippi. And yes, Carl, I got your email. I'm going to review your position paper over the weekend, or maybe by Monday, and get back to you. It looks great. Some really, really interesting information in there. So really appreciate all of our sponsors. And Joe, how can our listeners find out more about our wonderful sponsors?
Well, if you just fire up your PC or any other device that you have, your smartphone, and get on iymoney.com. That's IY, just the letters IY money for itsyourmoney.com, and click on sponsors. All of their great information is there, their contact information, their bios, and everything else. And Richard's had a long relationship with all these sponsors, so they're all top-notch in their field, as is Richard, correct?
I think I am, but I'm getting older, so I don't know.
And speaking of contact information, how about our guest give out his contact information if there's someone to reach you down at the museum, Jim?
Well, you can always call the museum, 619-234-8291. Ask for me, and they're going to somehow find me, unfortunately.
Okay.
And
one more time on the phone number, please.
Oh, 619-234-8291.
Got it.
And
the
website,
again, we should give. It's
sandiegoairandspace.org.
There you go. Very simple. They have a great website. Hey, I saw the X-15 on there. I remember that jet. That thing only flew for up to 2 minutes. That was its total flight, and it flew at, 345,000 feet?
Oh, no. The X-15 program was quite a program, really. And, you know, that's kind of, in a weird sort of way, a space program using an airplane.
Yeah, that was, and it flew pretty dang fast, like 4,250, almost as many hours as you've had in flight.
Right.
So, 4,200 miles an hour. I mean, this is crazy. But anyway.
So, Jim, question. You guys recently, I think, did a, not a deal, but I mean, you wound up with the old General Dynamics wind tunnel, right?
Yeah, actually,
can you tell us what that is? Because it's a really neat thing. I've actually seen it. It's really, really interesting.
Well, you know, actually built back in, they started building it in 1944.
Right.
It's poured in place concrete, finished it 3 years later in 47, built by Consolidated Aircraft. And it had a number of different owners through the years, and Allied Aerospace owned it when it was transitioned to us back here about 7.5-8 years ago. We operated as a wind tunnel. It has... every major aerospace company, whether civil or military, participating, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, Boeing, Cessna.
So it's basically used for research to simulate what would happen with a particular craft?
Absolutely. Plus, the USA Luge team's been there.
Okay.
I always tell people that every major bicycle competitor that's taking performance-enhancing drugs has been there. Yeah. And
that would be Lance Did Wrong? Armstrong?
I'm not sure. Anyway, so we do that kind of stuff. We've had flying cars in there. We've had skateboards. We've actually done testing on tents. You know, the young kid fell off his skateboard at speed 85 and said, you know, got back up and said, let's go again. And
I was watching the X Games last week. Those guys are amazing.
How strong are those winds in that device there?
We can produce about 300 miles an hour. It's a... it's by definition
that's
a low-speed wind
tunnel.
It's almost
as good as some politicians, I know.
It is. That's right. And every Boeing jetliner, starting from the 707 to the 787,
their
newest, has tested in the tunnel here in San Diego. It's a treasure for our community.
Where is it located?
It's down on Pacific Highway, close to the Landmark Aviation, you know, the FBO down there. And we operate it. It has a loading of about 45 to 60.
No public tours available for that, though. Or
I'm sorry.
Are public tours available for that? Or
well, they really aren't. We do some special events down there, and we have done tours for special groups. We simply have to schedule those because very carefully, mainly because the testing is proprietary, and it's not uncommon for a tester to come in and be there with us for 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Wow. They must pay a pretty good penny for that, don't they?
Well, they do. It's a good rate, but you know, once again, it doesn't operate on a 100% loaded basis,
right.
So it's not quite as lucrative as we would like it to be. Mm-hmm. And because of some of what's going on right now, we've seen a little bit of a pullback on the research and development by many of the companies, defense industry as well as civil aviation, not knowing what's happening to the future of aviation. You know, there's been a little bit of a change, just as you alluded earlier to a change in our incentive to do space exploration. We've seen a little bit of a pullback there also.
Did the Dreamliner test down there?
They did 787.
Yeah, so they're back up in the air now, right? They have.
Well, they are. They've they've gotten the battery change approved, and I don't know if you ever had a chance to go up to Everett, Washington, you know, where they actually build them. Mm-hmm. But it's a heck of a plant, largest hangars you'll ever see, largest hangars in the world. And because it's a pretty big jet and a very, very interesting tour.
These planes are made out of polycarbonate, right? There's pretty much the
well, you know, you skin. Look at we call the plastic airplanes. Mm-hmm. You know, we're into composite structures and have been in many airplanes for a long time. This was really just the first jetliner that was going to be designed that way. And, you know, it has a lot of advantages, certainly weight advantages if you look at
flexibility, you know, right? I mean, some engineer told me you could take the wings, actually fold them up, and they can touch each other over there.
If you ever want to go up some interesting YouTube stuff, go watch their wing testing, and you'll go, oh my goodness! Certainly the flexibility and the durability of the airplane. Right here in town, you know, Lyndon Blue, vice chair for General Atomics, who's certainly an innovative thinker. You know, he's been working with a company that he owns called Spectrum Aviation to build a biz jet, essentially a plastic airplane.
But getting back to space, Richard, you know, you got to get down. They got moon rocks over there. It's really cool at the museum. It's really cool. And spacesuits and all this stuff that the astronauts wore. It's really cool. You got to get that.
Well, we do great stuff. And, of course, I tell people that I give away 3 or 4 moon rocks a week away to young boys and girls, and then I go out to the parking lot and get some more.
that's where I figured they must come from, because how many moon rocks could you have?
You know what? Maybe the planets were conjoined at one point. Maybe they are moon rocks.
That's right. So. that's a great story anyway.
So, Richard, you had another thought or question?
Sort of like Mickey Mantle's autograph. But anyway, I think it was Billy Martin who used to sign it. So believe it or not, you guys have an exhibit at the museum, Robert Ripley's Believe It or Not. How on earth does that relate to air and space?
Well, you know, much of, first of all, we've got about 175 plus objects from the Ripley warehouse.
Okay.
And we added that with about 50 from us. You know, we have... some believe it or not things like the goggles that Lindbergh wore when he flew across the Atlantic. We've got the Blue Max of the Red Baron. So we've got a number of our things that we integrated into this exhibit. But there's certainly an aviation, a space, thrust into the exhibit, as well as transportation. But also there's some Ripley's. Because as you stated earlier, back in 1935, Robert Ripley brought what was then called the...
Auditorium, but it was spelled ODD. This was the California Pacific Exposition of 1935 that was held in San Diego.
Right. So one of our goals was to bring Ripley back to San Diego, which we've done. I will tell you that when we approached, and it was our team that, when I first approached a gentleman at, by the way, the American Alliance of Museums, you know, we're an accredited museum with the AAM. When I approached the Ripley's representative, I said, you know, I've got a couple crazy thoughts I'd like to run across you and get your ideas. And he says, you know, here at Ripley's, we like a little bit crazy. Yeah. So, and they've been a wonderful, wonderful partner. They care. And I think that's what you're looking for.
That's great. But, hey, we'll get a little crazy when we come back from this break, Jim. Hang on, everybody. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money, Your Life after this. All right, we're back in the home stretch for It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guest, Jim Kidrick, CEO and president of the San Diego Air and Space Museum, and Richard. So, hey, gents, can I mention my uncle and the whole John Glenn episode? He was the first guy to orbit the globe.
Did we say no here?
It was by a vote of 1.5 to
I think it was 1962, right, John? He was the first
62, yeah.
First astronaut to orbit the globe. But anyway, my uncle happened to be an engineer, went to school on the GI Bill, by the way, and was an engineer. And I remember as a young kid of, I probably was 8 at the time, but Walter Cronkite, who you know was the big newscaster, who was a big advocate of the space program, he mentioned my uncle by name as one of the designers of one of the stages of the Friendship 7, which John Glenn was flying in. So those were.
And your uncle's name was what?
Vic Vecchio.
Vic Vecchio.
He's deceased, but it was a pretty big moment. So as you can imagine. But anyway, you guys all remember John Glenn, right? But you know, you've got
several. Plus, you know, Wally Schirra right here.
Yeah, he's local.
You know, local boy. He passed away a few years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, Wally was the only astronaut to fly in all three programs.
Really?
Oh, really?
Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo.
Apollo.
And you know, albeit Wally didn't go to the moon, but Wally flew, you know, Apollo 7. Now, in my personal opinion, you know, after they had the fire in Apollo 1, mm-hmm. you know, that killed three of really our heroes. And so now, you know, the next flight up is really kind of a test op. You know, they redesigned mm-hmm. The capsule completely. And I'm sure they sat down with Wally and said, okay, Wally, your goal is to get up and get down and nobody dies.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was a very, very important, once again, test flight. Because the next shot was Apollo 8, and that was the Bill Anders, Frank Borman, and Jim Lovell, you know, to the moon and back, you know, where they actually went out there and circled a number of times and then returned. So I look at Wally as being, you know, someone I think very, very special to be chosen for that flight, because I'm convinced they picked somebody who had that Mercury, had that Gemini, you know, experience to say, okay, we got to get somebody up here, because I would have told you that the program, had Apollo 7 not been successful, the program could have stopped right there.
Mm-hmm.
These astronauts train. I mean, how much training do they go through? I mean, it's amazing. I mean, they're
tremendous amount. And you know, and of course, that's what, you know, when you look at the astronauts that, especially the legacy astronauts, you know, they come from the military services. You know, all the Navy ones will always tell you that the toughest thing they ever did, whether it was in space or flying, was landing on an aircraft carrier, which we were talking about a little bit earlier. You know, the challenges and the discipline associated with ensuring that you're doing the right thing at the right time, and that that you're very exacting in what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you look at, you know, even going back to Sullenberger and the Hudson, and, you know, being able to, you know, say, hey, well, I really didn't think I was going to land this airliner in the river. But all of a sudden having to make some choices and just kind of go, you know, step through the process.
In split seconds.
Well, we used to have an old saying, you know, when the master caution light, you know, came on in the airplane, which meant that, you know, you had something that, you know, could be very bad, you know, it would draw your eyes to the master caution panel. But the first procedure we used to kind of joke was to wind the clock. And somebody would say, well, you know, why would you wind the clock? And winding the clock was so we didn't do anything wrong, that we didn't jump into, you know, a situation where we inadvertently shut the engine down, you know, or started making decisions that could affect, you know, the airplane, you, whoever's with you, before you really, really understood the challenge.
Mm. I think Richard, you had a question?
Well, so speaking of challenges, you're in the nonprofit world. What kind of challenges are you seeing out there in the nonprofit world? I mean, the economy, the downturn of 08, I mean, what's going on just in general?
Yeah, and we would have told you we saw it actually mid 2007.
So you saw it a little bit sooner. Yeah,
and
okay.
You know, it you know, when you talk about discretionary income, and that's kind of what we are, you know, from someone who, whether or not they're trying to inspire or educate their children, you know, we're still, you know, we're not the house bill, the, you know, the auto payment, mm-hmm. the, you know, electric bill. And so I think you have to, number one is you know, simply be very, very good at what you do. I think that I told our staff, you know, when this was all happening and you could kind of see it, and it was worsening, as we all knew, for a short time, I said, you know, we've got to do three things. Number one is we simply have to work harder. You know, there are times in our life where you have to buckle down and you're stiffened into the wind a little bit. Number two is, okay, you better be good at what you do. So if we need some additional training or, you know, whatever it might be, don't leave that out. I mean, don't say, okay, well, we'll back totally off, okay, because we actually at that time have to be better than perhaps at other times. And number three is, you'll get a kick out of this, I told him we need to be good street fighters. And street mm-hmm. fighters defined by me as connected to our constituents, because, you know, we really are about the guest experience. We're there for the public good. We care. And if you're not connected, you know, another phrase that I've used for a long time, for them to remember, is that selling's not about selling. Selling's about buying. So if you're not dialed in to what they're going to buy or want to buy, or, you know, could be incentivized to, you know, seek that next step, then, you know, it's simply not going to work.
Hmm.
Things turning around a little bit, though, in terms of...
I think they are. I would tell you that, number one, is we have a wonderful staff, wonderful team of volunteers, whether they're the docents in our restoration department. You know, they make the difference. Because, once again, it's not just the economy. Sometimes in San Diego, you know, our main competition is the beach, the sun.
So much to do here in town.
It's we've got lots to do.
It's amazing.
But I would tell you that I think we've turned the corner. I think that we genuinely provide, a world-class experience. When I first got there, you'd see a typical walk through the museum might last, 30, 45 minutes. We can get them in there for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's impressive.
And they'll spend an hour, hour and a half plus, sometimes just in the Ripley's beginning before they enter the main museum. And that's very exciting to see.
Yeah, I'm curious, what's your favorite Ripley artifact?
How about that guy? How tall is he?
Well, the new Wadlow that we just brought in, and we also brought in something from Dr. Seuss, here in San Diego.
Yes, I took
Diego.
A picture of it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I would tell you, the Wadlow is pretty competitive.
Yeah. He's the world's tallest guy. Was he 8 foot 11?
8 foot 11. But I'm going to tell you, it's probably the Berlin Wall.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Cool.
It's got two main sections, not just a little rock, see.
I touched it. Yeah,
right?
It's amazing.
And I will tell you that there's, when you think of how old we are, to the generations that don't fully understand the Berlin Wall and its significance, to see it there. My brother was an Army helicopter flyer, helicopter pilot, and he flew Border Patrol in Germany. And, some of the stories, you realize that... the other side of that wall, by the way, has nothing on it.
Yeah,
the graffiti was on the free side.
Right, the graffiti's only on the free side.
That's right.
Right, you weren't allowed to do the graffiti on the other side.
If you go over there and just see the whole region, it's pretty impressive. But I got to tell you, the East Berlin, I mean, it's very high, where the Hotel Adlon is, and very highly developed, more so than West Berlin now. I mean, it seems a lot of developments, but they've preserved a lot of the walls, and you can still see the graffiti. And actually, through the streets of Berlin, they have preserved in the street where the wall stood, so you can see this little metal railing water running through the street.
So I think that's when you look at something that's very impactful. I mean, because we got some neat stuff. The wooden Ferrari that's really a boat. We've got the
car made out of dimes and all.
That's exactly right. Well, and the boat that was used in the movie Ben Hur.
Yes.
And some of Charlton Heston's things. And so and plus, once again, going back to Lindbergh's goggles. I mean, very few people.
You get something that Amelia Earhart wore also. I think you have her shirt, don't you, or something?
We do. Yeah. We do. And also an image made from smoke, an artist that made her image from smoke.
Yeah,
and
that's amazing. No painting.
Well, and when you think of, this always reminds me personally of when you wonder what people are doing in the spare bedroom or the garage at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or 2 in the morning. Let me tell you, I can show you a couple of those.
Oh my!
Things.
How about the guy with the roller coaster? The 20,000 hours he put into building this model roller coaster that actually works. It's
great.
It's all encased, but it's really an amazing.
Yeah.
Thing.
So you say, hey, what are you doing at home? You go, really?
But anyway, we're getting close to wrap-up time here, Jim.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, believe it or not. Thank you so much for being our guest. SanDiegoAirAndSpace.org, folks. Get on the site. Get down to the museum. See the moon rocks, the space stuff, all the planes. It's great.
Well, and I'll tell you, the simulators, the 3D, 4D theater, everything we do there is meant to be fun. We don't want to be just that old, dusty, tired, quiet experience. We want to be something that a fifth grader talks about on Monday morning, saying, you know where you ought to go?
Yeah. You got it. San Diego Air and Space. Hey, Richard, you have a great week, my friend.
You too, I shall.
Yes, and you folks out there, have a great week. We'll see you next time on Instrument in Your Life. Good night now. Take care.